Alexandra Horwitz joins me by phone tonight. She teaches psychology, canine cognition, and creative nonfiction writing at Barnard College, Columbia University. She earned her PhD in cognitive science and has studied the cognition of humans, rhinoceroses, bonobos, and dogs. Her book, Inside of a Dog, was number one on the New York Times bestseller list for well over a year. Newly out now is her adaptation of Inside of a Dog, What Dogs See, Smell, and Know, for young adult readers. I'm guessing she has a lot of affection as well as knowledge about our four-legged friends, as this book is dedicated to Pumpernickel. Thank you, Alexandra. I'm delighted to welcome you to Around Cincinnati. And I want to tell you, I so appreciated your approach to informing us about dogs. You do it with such knowledge and affection, but also respect, and provide such clarity about why dogs do certain things. So let's start with something we humans like to interpret as kisses, otherwise known as licking. And why is our dog doing it?
Right. I think it definitely is a kind of greeting, as it feels like, and possibly affectionate. But if we look at the behavior of some of their closest relatives, wolves do an interesting kiss of each other. When a hunting wolf returns to the pack, everyone else mobs that wolf and licks around the face, and it prompts the wolf to vomit up a little bit of what it's eaten so that everyone can share it. So we wonder if, instead of being just a sign of affection, when our dog licks our face, is a little bit of a request for the sandwich we just ate.
One of the most fascinating things is a dog's sense of smell. So tell us physically how it differs from ours and the myriad of ways a dog is informed through this sense.
Yeah, it definitely differs along every level. So they have hundreds of millions more receptors in their nose for smelling things than we do. They sniff better than we do, so that when we sniff out, whatever smell we're smelling comes out, but they exhale through the side slits of their nose. That's what those side slits are useful for. And they have a second organ above the roof of their mouth called the vomeronasal organ, where they can detect molecules that don't really have a smell, like hormones. So this allows them to basically smell the world the way we see it. I think that's their primary sensory experience. And so they recognize things through smell. They can detect when you're feeling stressed or sad. And there are dogs now who are trained to do all sorts of what seem like impossible things just through their smell, detect diseases. We know about all the explosives detection dogs. So I think their world is defined by smell.
Could you talk a little bit about smelling the past as well as the present?
Yeah, smells really tell time. So a strong odor is something new or recent, something that just happened, or is something that's presently there. And a weak odor is something that happened in the past and has started to diffuse. And so in some ways, I think that they can smell a bigger sense of the moment. They smell a little bit of the future coming around the corner on a wind, and they can smell the past and what smells are underfoot. So I think they're smelling time.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Pumpernickel. I was particularly intrigued by something you would do when you were gone for the day, which is you would leave treats around the house for her. Tell us a bit about why you had that practice.
When I started living with Pumpernickel, I had lived with dogs as a child, but I didn't have much understanding or reflection on what her experience was like during the day. But of course, many of us have to leave our dogs for a long period of time during the day, and it's certainly boring for them, and it might even make them very anxious and ill. And so I started trying to concoct things that I could do. Now people get dog walkers, and that's a great preoccupation, interest for the dog. But I thought, I'd set up little puzzles around the house, things for her to hunt for and find, to engage her in those hours until I could come back and engage her myself.
Well, another quality or way of communicating that you talk about is the tail wagging. And there are a lot of different meanings that dogs convey this way.
Yeah, absolutely. So we get into a way of saying, oh, a wagging tail is a happy dog. And it's actually a lot more complicated than that. So for instance, if a tail is wagging loosely, I would say that's probably a happy, relaxed dog. But if a tail is held up stiffly and wagging stiffly, that might be a dog which is overexcited or anxious. And so there are lots of other meanings of different tail wags, and then that in combination with the other parts of the body is something that as people who live with dogs, we really have to learn to read better so that we know what our dog is experiencing.
Well, I want to thank you so much for this very informative book. Certainly great for young adults who often are living with pets and will improve their lives together. Thanks for visiting with us, Alexandra.
Thank you so much.
I've been talking with Alexandra Horowitz about her young adult version of Inside of a Dog. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.